Welcome to Thoughts from Home, your conservation podcast from the National Conservation Training Center. We're located along the Potomac River in historic Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and are home to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Thoughts from Home podcast series. I'm Cecilia Melton from NCTC. Our guest today is Rob Chapman, Natural Resources Management Biologist here at NCTC. Welcome, Rob. Today, we're going to chat with Rob about the annual deer hunt at NCTC. Rob, could you tell us about the deer hunt? Why do we do it?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on. We do the deer hunt on NCTC because we live in a part of Jefferson County, West Virginia, that has a very abundant deer population. And high deer abundance generally means issues with trying to manage the ecosystem. So it's an attempt on our part to try and get that deer herd down a little bit to help us with our land management.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically trying to be the predator.
We are the predator. We're the primary predator between our hunters and our vehicles.
Right.
Those are the primary predators of deer, at least right here in this part of the world. There are a few coyotes around that'll occasionally take a deer. Bobcat numbers are low. They would occasionally take a fawn, but we don't have wolves. We don't have mountain lions here. So we are the number one predator of deer. Yeah.
So what are some of the issues that will happen with the ecosystem with the high deer populations?
Well, so let's, you know, from a forest management standpoint, if you're looking at trying to regenerate oak, deer will eat a lot of the oak that are regenerating the understory, so they can cause issues with forest regeneration. Mm-hmm. They can cause issues with understory plants, so a lot of the plants that grow on the forest floor, they could eat a lot of those. So your overall floristic diversity is typically going to decline when you have high deer abundance, even in our meadow systems, you know, with invasive species aside, deer will hit a lot of our native plants in our meadows as well. And anybody that has landscaping in high deer populated areas kind of understand how deer can really mess with your landscape plants. And
all our neighbors around us.
Yes.
The pretty flowers that are eating by
Yep. So hostas don't stand up very well to high deer abundance. So deer can cause all kinds of problems, you know, with landscaping and with ecosystem management and biodiversity. Yeah. So deer, of course, are part of our ecosystem. It is a native species. Mm-hmm. So we need to have deer around for the some ecological processes that they provide, but their abundance is so high that it does cause some problems.
Deer hunt here in CTC. Who comes and hunt?
So our hunt is open to the general public. Anybody can come and hunt as long as they complete the online orientation, get on our security list so they can come in and access the property. So we only have 28 hunting locations right now. It's not a typical deer hunt where you can go out and move around. Since our property is small, we're only 532 acres. Mm-hmm. So in order to maximize the potential deer harvest and maximize opportunities for hunters, we have set locations, stands, they're hunting stands or hunting blinds. Those hunters, they can pick where they want to hunt, and they have to stay there. They can't move around.
Okay.
And so that kind of limits a person's ability to move based on weather conditions or deer movement patterns.
Uh-huh.
If we were to allow a traditional deer hunt, we could only accommodate a couple hunters given our small size. So, yeah, you just take an online orientation, then show up for the hunt, and we do the random draw before each hunt. Yeah, and then, you know, once if your name's called, then you can pick a stand. Whatever's left, by the time your name is called, you can pick where you want.
And then you follow all the rules and regulations from the West Virginia DNR as well.
We do. The state of West Virginia, as most states, have authority and jurisdiction on whitetail deer management. So we follow their seasons. So we allow archery and shotgun and muzzleloaders on here. We don't allow high-powered rifles on the property. That is one extra regulation that we put on top of the West Virginia regulations. But we follow the season dates. We follow the method protocols with the additional restriction of no rifles. And then bag limits. So what the hunters can harvest, whether it's a doe or a buck, they have to follow those regulations. And we also add a regulation of an earn a buck. So you just can't come on the property and shoot or harvest a buck on your first time hunting here every year. You have to shoot
a doe.
Well, you have to harvest a doe off of NCTC first before we will allow you to harvest a buck.
It doesn't count if you harvest a doe somewhere else.
It does not count. No, you have to take it from our property. And then all deer have to be checked out through our check station so we can get some biological information off those deer. We look at the age structure of our population, and which is mostly young. We look at weights too. We'll look at, we'll get a weight on all the deer that, that come in. Field dressed weight. We don't want live weight. We want field dressed weight just to, for consistency. And we may also start doing some other biological sampling. You know, if the state of West Virginia wants us to sample tissues for various monitoring efforts, we have the capacity to do that. Yeah. So we're not doing that this year, but
you mentioned age, and I think it's very interesting how that is determined, and somebody that is listening might have never heard about this. Could you tell us a little bit how do you determine age?
Yeah. So you cannot tell the age of a deer by counting the points, at least on a buck. Now, there are some folks that believe, well, a four-point buck is a four-year-old.
Okay.
That is not the case. So the quick way we do that in the field is looking at tooth wear and tooth replacement. So to do that, we typically have to cut the jaw open. So if it's a deer that somebody's not going to hang on the wall as a mount, we will slice the jaw open all the way so we can get our, we have a pry bar, special pry bar that we can put in their mouth and pry that, that open. And we look at the tooth wear and replacement. So from a fawn of the year, so this would be like a six months old, up to a year and a half, we look for the presence of a milk tooth. So the first premolar will be tricuspid or have three cusps on it. If that tooth is present, it's either going to be a fawn or a year and a half. And pretty easy to tell size-wise whether that's a fawn or a year and a half. So fawns are pretty small still. They have no staining virtually on the, the rest of the teeth. All the teeth are pretty clean and white. You know, they're smaller, the 30 to 60 pounds lighter depending on the animal and the other does around. But a year and a half old deer that still has that milk tooth, we're going to see some substantial staining on the rest of the teeth on there, aside from the just being a bigger bodied animal. Can, you know, if we just had the jaw, didn't have the animal, we could tell if it was a year and a half just by looking at the presence of that tricusp premolar and the rest of the staining on the teeth. A year and a half can also shed that premolar also, so we can get a year and a half that has shed that, so it's a deciduous tooth. That's pretty easy to tell because that two-cusped premolar that is replacing that three-cusped will either be just starting to emerge, so it'll be halfway out, or if it's fully emerged, it's not going to be stained. It's going to be bright white. So, yeah, so we can still tell that year and a half, even if it has shed that first tooth. Beyond a year and a half, it gets a little bit more subjective. Then we start looking at tooth wear of the molars in the back. We look at the dentine layer. How wide is that dentine layer? And, of course, diet affects that. So if they're eating a diet high in silicate plants, you know, the tooth wear is going to be a lot more, a lot more fast or a lot quicker. So it's a little bit more subjective beyond a year and a half, but you can, it's still fairly accurate up to about 4.5 years old. Once you get 5.5, 6.5 years old and older, that dentine layer starts getting really wide because of tooth wear. And so it's a lot more subjective the older the deer gets. If we wanted to be more accurate, we could harvest a tooth and send that tooth in for lab analysis. They can they can slice the root and count rings on the root and give us a better estimate, but that costs money. And we generally, from our management standpoint, we really don't need to know to that level of certainty. So we just do the age wear. There's lots of great resources online for people. I know the Indiana Department of Natural Resources has an outstanding PDF, and other organizations do as well, that you can find pictures online if you're wanting to do that.
Out there and you want to know what age it was, you can find those resources.
There's lots of resources. Most state agencies have something like that.
Thank you.
And
I know you've been here at NCTC for not too long, but before NCTC, you also worked somewhere else also with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and also you were managing deer hunts. Can you tell us about other experiences and how that compares to what we have here at NCTC?
Sure. So I came to NCTC from Big Oaks National Wildlife Refuge in Southeast Indiana, Region 3. And, you know, here we have 532 acres. There we had 50,000 acres.
Quite a difference.
Yeah, a little bit. So we have a managed deer hunt there. That deer population was not nearly as large. You know, I don't know what the size was for that, but I do know it's not nearly as large
the
as what we have here. Our densities are pretty high here. So to hunt there, you have to apply online through the state. The state of Indiana does the draw hunt for the refuge. So the refuge doesn't conduct the draw. The state does. And then they only hunt about 25,000 acres of that refuge. The other 25,000 acres is full of unexploded ordnance because it's an old Army proving ground. So there's areas that, okay, you know, you just can't.
You don't want to go there.
There were areas we would not walk into. Okay. Yeah. So there, the draw to hunt at Big Oaks is massive antler opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of big bucks because there's a huge amount of refugia there. The bucks just have a tendency to get really large as far as antler size.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a big interest in deer hunting there. Mm-hmm. So they'll harvest anywhere from 300 to 400 deer per year there. And when they first started deer hunting, when the Army was still running, they didn't have much deer hunting on there, and the deer densities were pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, over the last 25, 30 years, that number through hunting has come down, and it's more an ecological equilibrium there.
Okay.
So that hunt, where our hunt here at NCTC is more of a deer reduction hunt, because mm-hmm. we're trying to get that,
yes,
that deer population down. There, it's a deer management hunt. So it's
okay
to maintain and to keep mm-hmm. those numbers where they are. I know, and talking to Joe Robb, the refuge manager out there, they saw a huge reduction in deer this year through epizootic hemorrhagic disease.
Oh.
It hit the population pretty hard. So, you know, last year, I think their harvest was over 300 deer. This year, I think it was 115.
Okay.
So they saw a huge decline in deer mortality just from that one disease.
Mm-hmm.
The chances of us having hemorrhagic disease here are pretty low because we don't have a whole lot of wetlands on our landscape
okay
here. Whereas there at Big Oaks, they have a lot of wetlands mm-hmm. created by beavers
yeah
for the most part. And when those wetlands dry out, creates habitat for this midge that spreads this
okay
disease. And most, you know, a lot of deer will fight it off.
Mm-hmm.
But some, you can see some high mortality from that. It'll take them a few years to recover from that
okay
population decline. Yeah, so the hunting's much different out there.
Yeah, so it's very different. Year. You were mentioning here, you have the deer stands. There is more like the go after the deer.
Yeah, they have several hunting units, and the hunters pick, they get to pick which hunting unit they want to go into, and each unit will hold so many hunters, and that varies by how big that unit
mm-hmm.
is. And those hunters can move around wherever they want
right
within that unit compared to us, where
yeah
you have to basically
have to
be stationary.
Yeah.
There you kind of pursue the deer a little bit. Mm-hmm. Here you just kind of have to wait for the deer to walk by.
To go to you.
Yeah.
Thank yep you. And you mentioned numbers out there, but how was the deer hunt this year? Do you think it's been successful? Are you getting as many deers as you were hoping?
We're looking like we're probably right around our average. We're at 31 deer harvested so far.
Mm-hmm.
Last year we had 36. We have two more hunts this year.
Okay.
So we have a pretty good chance of beating last year's number. But that's all up to the deer and up to the hunters.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to show up and where are the deer going to be when people show up? So that, you know, that's really out of our, I can't just email the deer and tell them,
yeah,
you know, hey, walk by this area.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of factors that come into
mm-hmm.
play there. You know, weather can certainly be,
yeah,
be an influence. If it's, you know, raining and windy, you know, hunters may not show up.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the deer aren't moving around as much either
yeah
during those conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So weather plays a big part on
mm-hmm.
on what our success is going to be. And whether we're hunting inside the rut. So the rut is the reproduction period
okay
for deer.
Oh, right.
So
mm-hmm.
deer are really moving around a lot during the rut. The
mm-hmm.
bucks are chasing the does.
Yeah.
You know, we're coming out of the rut now. So the deer are
not
moving around as much. I'm not seeing as many moving around on the
uh-huh.
roads like I was a couple
yeah
weeks ago.
Yes.
So, yeah, so we're kind of coming out of that. That'll influence success rates
mm-hmm. so you have
to some extent.
Weekends.
We have two more weekends, yeah.
Well, thank you. So if anybody that missed the hunt this year and would like to sign up for next year, about what time of year do you start signing people up for it?
Generally in August, we'll open the orientation window
okay
and prospective hunters will have until the end of September to complete that orientation. So basically they go online, watch a video, look at our rules and regulations,
mm-hmm.
agree to follow our rules and regulations. Then basically they just fill their name out on online form and submit that. And that form goes into a database that we can then give to our security folks
okay
to let those hunters in.
And so all that, they will see it in our website.
Yeah.
They
so
will
it,
look at NCTC.
Yes, it'll be on our website, usually somewhere early to mid-August.
Okay.
That information goes live and then they'll have...
So hopefully
have
you have
days
a lot of people signing up next year.
Yeah.
So to conclude this conversation, I would like to know if you have any fun stories or interesting stories about deer hunts, either here or in your previous experience.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about one that's I find it kind of fun.
Okay.
So this is back at a former refuge that I worked on. We had a hunter that called in and said his partner has thrown his hip out. And, okay, so call the authorities, get an ambulance coming. And so we had a crew meet the ambulance, and I went out and made first contact with these folks just to find out what, all right, how serious of a situation is this. And at the time, I didn't know how the guy hurt his hip. You know, all I know is he dislocated his hip. And as I'm walking into where this hunter's located, I could actually smell him before I saw him because he was sitting over a log taking a number two, that's how he blew his hip out. I have no idea how this guy did that, but then we had to try and get this guy out of the woods with his britches around his knees.
Oh, no.
Sitting on the log. So that was interesting. We EMS got there. We managed to get him on the stretcher, and fortunately, he was not that far from the road, but it still was quite an effort to get him. He was just so much pain. It was, it was, I mean,
that's a story to remember.
Yeah, he was like, I am not getting on that. It hurts too much. And the EMS guy was like, just scream. It's going to hurt because you're getting on this.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was kind of an interesting,
that's
kind
a
of
different
a fun
one. Yeah.
Yeah. You never know what kind of things
you
are going to happen.
Know, right?
Yeah.
So you never know what to expect. I'm sure people get lost and you have to go find people. I know you work with.
Yeah, we've had several people get lost. We had one guy that he called 911 instead of calling us. And, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
Actually, the 911 was able to ping his location. So the emergency services gave us the Latin long where his phone was. And we got to him. He was pretty scared, and he had already started a fire, or trying to start a fire. He wasn't successful at starting a fire to keep warm. But if you need to, that's fine. But, you know, we don't want a wildfire situation either.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, we got him out successfully because he called 911.
Yeah.
But, we've had several lost hunter issues where we've had to go out and find them.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Rob, today. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Thoughts from Home.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the National Conservation Training Center podcast series. If you have feedback, thoughts, or stories you'd like to share, contact us at nctc_podcast@fws.gov.